Today's daf in Besechet Shabbat brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh on this Rosh Chodesh Av Tov Shin Pei is Daf Kuf Lamed Chet. We're holding right at the beginning of the Halak Perek on Daf Kuf Lamed Zayin Amud Beit at the Mishnah. So, we do have our Richie, but I guess we can't ask him to do it again, right? Although it's so sweet. Well, if you'll give us a find on the Halak Perek, the COVID Rosh Chodesh, it'll be so special. Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Tolin et Mishameret b'Yom Tov v'notnim l'tluya b'Shabbat. So now what we're going to be talking about here for a while are some of the inyanim of Machshirin, again, because we've been talking about the concept of Machshirin. In terms of Dechiya Shabbos, there's also a concept of a Dechiya of Yontev in a sense, because Yontev, after all, we are allowed to do what we need to do, Litzorach Ochol Nefesh, right? So if we take the Inyan of Shabbos and the Mila on Shabbos, then we wonder, when the Torah tells us to do something which normally would be Usur, but it's being Matir over here, in that case because of Mila, according to Rebbe Eliezer, it includes the Machshirin as well. And that was the whole point of the discussion that we had in the last parak. In this parak, we end up finding out that according to Rebbe Eliezer, the same thing is true in a very similar kind of way to Yontev. So where the Torah was matir us to do Tzarech Eichel Nefesh, does that include preparing things for Eichel Nefesh? In other words, in the same way that we're allowed to cut down the trees, to make the charcoal, to make the steel, to make the knife in order to do Mila, would we be allowed to build the oven, to make the cake, on Yontev, or no? You can only use an oven that's already there to make the cake that we want to eat. So, we continue on now with the next parak of Rebbe Eliezer, and this is the parak of Rebbe Eliezer in Teilin, but we just call it Teilin. So, what is Teilin at HaMishomeret? So, basically, what that is if you're going to be filtering wine, and you're down at the bottom of the barrel, and you've got a lot of dregs in that wine. And you'll see why I'm saying specifically it's that case where you got a lot of dregs. And what you do is, the norm was in those days, what you do is you would make yourself a little filter. The way that you made a filter is the filter came in two parts. And there was that a bottom plate, or like a bowl kind of thing, which had a wide rim. And then you had a elastic band around a little bit of a gauze-like piece of cloth. And you would take the band, put it around the bowl, it was a deep bowl, which basically made a filter on top because it would go into the bowl a bit, and then you would pour the wine through. All of the dregs would stay on top of the cloth gauze, and the wine would go through into the bowl, and then you'd be able to pour it out of a spout. So the question over here was, if I make the mishameret by taking the gauze cloth and putting it around the edges of the underlying bowl, I'm really making an ohel. So, albeit it's an ohel that is obviously temporary, but nonetheless, I mean, normally we aser, at least minarabbanan, we aser asiyas ohel, and is it mutter to do this on yontav even lechatchila? So Rebbe Eliezer says, yes, you can actually do this because it's makshirim, as we'll see. And Rebbe Eliezer Shita is about the makshirim, that they are docha as well. That's how we end up in the Gemara. And therefore, you are both allowed to be toilet. And if it was already made before Shabbos, you'd even be allowed to pour the wine into a mishameret on Shabbos, which is rather shocking because you'd think that that would be literally borer. And like all Rashi says is that ain derech borer bekach. And it is not at all clear why it is ain derech borer bekach. In other words, is there, if it's already there, it certainly seems to be a standard borer. Okay, so anyway, this is a big machlokas about inyonim that we've spoken about in the past, whether borer that is meant to be done for immediate consumption as opposed to storing, is that considered to be borer? And by wine, it would always be for immediate consumption. Nobody would pour out his wine and let it sit there open like that unless they are going to be drinking, as we just had yesterday in Kalim, you're makpid bedafka not to allow air into a barrel of wine. The same thing would be true over here. So if it's right before the meal, then it's the derech to aerate the wine, as we do. And then you aerate the wine at the same time you pour it through the filter. So maybe that's why it's not considered to be derech borer, as Rashi is saying. And the Chachomim say, no, you are not allowed to be Torah, the Mishameret, and it is considered to be Derech Borah. We'll see whether they mean the Rice and the Rabbonah, but it is also to put it in to the Mishameret, even if the Mishameret was made on Shabbos. But if the Mishameret was made before Yontav, then you're doing something which is Tzorech Ochol Nefesh. And of course, the Tzorech Ochol Nefesh, we are Matir. Wait a minute over here, says the Gemara. Reb Eliezer was the one who was extremely makpid on adding even to an Ohel Arai. And now he's saying we can actually make one? This doesn't make sense. If Reb Eliezer asers being mosif an Ohel Arai, lo mosifin, he's going to be matras lemeva v'chatchila? Does that make sense? Well, obviously it does, because this is really a lead-in to making the point that what we're dealing with over here is makshirei ochel nefesh, and that's the whole idea. So first we want to establish that if it wouldn't have been for that, indeed Reb Eliezer would have answered it, and he's really the one that was machmir before on this sugya. Barnea doesn't have anything to drink in his hands. All he can do is wave his tefillin at me. This is a wonderful day. A gift from Rosh Chodesh. So, excellent. And he can't even say anything. He's got a mask over his mouth. This is a really unusual Barnea day. So, maybe we should try... Of course, tell us the name. Oh my gosh. I should have known it would be specially Barnea's neighborhood. The Levia, the Kahuna... Next thing will be, he's on his way to put on his Shmona Begadim. Nobody should be surprised. Anyway, he's heading right now to the mikveh of the Kohen Gadol, underneath the Kotel, I'm assuming, right? Okay. So the Gemara now is doing the lead-in. First, let's establish, really, and the way we do this is by pretending that, what, it doesn't make any sense at all. Reb Eliezer is Dafka, the one who is most machmir, and you're telling me that over here he's Mako? How could he be matir? Wait, what are you referring to? What do you mean, what am I referring to? We had the whole sugya, remember, of the shutter that is hanging off the side of the building. And according to Reb Eliezer, it has to be clearly hanging off of the building, not on the ground. It has to be attached. And only then could you put in a shutter, which is obviously the most far-fetched hosafa. I mean, come on. The house is a house. When I'm closing up a window or skylight, as the case is according to Rashi. So that is obviously only osufe, right? And yet he says, no, you got to make sure it's kashur v'talui, then pokekimbo. Mimlav ain't pokekimbo. With a chachomim say, what's the big deal? Benkach u'benkach pokekimbo, because it's only hosafa v'no'al aroi. So now how come over here he's being moderate? And take a look at the way Rabbi Barbachana says that Rabbi Yochanan explained the machlokas. Everybody is moda. That of course you can't start and make an olaroi, even on yontem. Kolshikan on Shabbos, you can't do that. The machlokas was whether you can be mosif. Reb Eliezer said you can't even be mosif unless it was already mechuber, like the case of the pkakachalon. And according to him, it would be otzer even on yontiv. And ain't tzorech lomer b'Shabbos. Whereas the chachom, you say, no, you can be mosif even on Shabbos. Ain't tzorech lomer b'yontiv. Whoa, so how did he come to be matir here more than the Chachomim? Yes, because he's basically old like Rabbi Yehuda. Remember the main halacha, the Tanya, Ein bein yom tev l'shabbos ala ochel nefesh bilvad, right? I mean, that's, everybody knows that's the difference. But Rabbi Yehuda says that even makshirim of ochel nefesh, and Rabbi Eliezer holds that even makshirim of ochel nefesh, since over here setting up the filtering system for the wine, would be a makshir for you to be able to drink fresh wine on yontem. Because of that, Yotzi could even do that. Wait a minute, Rabbi Yehuda wasn't matir any old thing. Rabbi Yehuda was matir makshirim that you couldn't have done before yontem. Now, what in the world would have prevented you from doing this before yontem and then pouring your wine into it on yontem? So how come holding like Reb Yud is a solution? Because remember, Reb Eliezer is our flagship of Makshirim. So he holds even more than Reb Yehuda. Reb Yehuda just matter Makshirim. Reb Yehuda, Reb Eliezer, on the other hand, takes it a step further. And he says any type of Makshirim whatsoever are allowed to be done, even if they could be done before Yontev, they can be done on Yontev proper. And therefore, the Reb Eliezer is even adifa mit Reb Yehuda. He even goes further than Reb Yehuda does. The Chachomim say, no, you're not allowed to be tailor the Mishameret on Yom Tov. What do they mean? I mean, are they saying that if you would be tailor it, so then what? I mean, you would be chayev if you were tailor on Shabbos. Would you be tailor? Would you be chayev a chatas? Ptolemy, Om Rav Yosef, yes. The Chachomim hold that it's literally an asiyas ohel, and therefore, if you did it on Shabbos, you'd be chayev a chatas. Obviously not on Yom Tov, because there's no Issur Koris on Yom Tov, and therefore there's no chayev of chatas. Omele Abaya, I mean, that sounds crazy to me, says Abaya. I don't understand. If you take a picture, you hang it up on a peg, okay? So basically what you've got, I understand this is not exactly the same as an oil, but what you're really doing is you're saying that, well, I am engaged in binyan. I mean, what other iser is there in terms of asiyas oil? So you're telling me, basically, if I take an elastic cloth and I put it around a bowl, that's binyan, midiraisa? I mean, so why not say if I take a pitcher and I hang it on a peg? So now I've added to the house. I mean, that's ridiculous. Toler kuzer bekistach and amid mechayev. Nobody would think such a nutty thing. That can't be true. Elo amar abaya. Obviously, the issue over here is midirabana. So, and Tosis points out, wait a minute. So then what are you going to say? You're going to say that putting a pitcher on a peg is also a midirabana? Of course not, because over there, it's clearly, I can tell you the difference between something that is building and which is similar to a house and so on. That's in a derabbanan. You can make all those kinds of differences, but if mishamerit would be deraisa, then you would never know where to make the difference. Because, I mean, it's all, basically you're saying adding on to something that's all made from before Shabbos, moving it around and doing something with it. I don't know why it's us. I mean, you must be saying even hanging the bottle would be usher. Midrabbanan, of course, I wouldn't have been made any type of comparison. And what is the basis of the Rabbanan? The basis of the Rabbanan is something new, which you should please write down in your lists of munachim. It's called Uvda Dechol. Shelo yaaseh kiderech shehu oseh bechol. Don't do it the way that you would normally do things into the week. So now the question is, I mean, how far does that go? There's lots of things that you do during the week. I mean, anything that I do during the week, I can't do it that way on Shabbos. I mean, so the point is that things that may, this is, it's actually big machlokas in precisely how to define uvda dechol. So some learn that if it's the type of thing which, if engaged in during the week, is generally something that leads you to complete it in a way that would be an Issur D'oraisa if it were done on Shabbos. It would be a complete malacha. So then it's part of something that comes to a malacha. That's what is called Uvda D'chol. So because of that, people, the Rabbanim made a gezeira that people who would do those kind of things may simply get carried away and go all the way to the end. And they would do it. But others learn that it's not. The idea of here, Uvda Dechol, is something that looks to people in a way that reminds them of the type of things which really are Usur on Shabbos. So that this has some kind of similarity to a tent, right? So because of that, do it. What they hold is do things like that only in a way that doesn't make them in any way reminiscent even of a malacha. So that would be the other approach. So it would mean that we would take things that otherwise would seem silly. I mean, come on, a strainer on a pot being considered to be making a building. But because of its similarity, even though it's extremely loose, there's a concept of a type of takana, which is called uvda dechol. That's a completely different approach. Now, Abaye, because of this confusion over here, about whether we're dealing with the deraita, we're dealing with the drabbanan, or are we dealing with things that are mutter, Abaye actually set himself a whole project that he would collect the different types of things that were similar to these issues of Ohel from all the different brises all over the place, and he would make them into three sets. Those that actually would be Osir in Midiraisa, those that would be Osir Midirabonan, and those that would even be Mutter Lechatchila. Sets like this are called Chumre, not from the Lashon of Chumra, but rather from the Lashon of Kesher, connections. So he made three sets. And he would be Mankita by Chumre Matnita. So he collected different sets of brises, three different sets, as I explained, and then he would be turning them as if they were a brisa, because basically he was putting together a lot of different brises, and he would say it over as if it's one brisa. So he'd put together a god, a mishameret, a kila, and a kisei galin. So over there the din is lo yaseh, but it's not a chiv diraisa. So those are the cases. We had the case of goad before, which is the leather bag in which you transport wine when you're on the road, or milk. And you can take this, you put it up at night, you stretch it out in such a way that the air goes around the whole thing and keeps it cool. So what this is it's not the standard leather thing, which is a small leather flask on top. Actually, this thing has those schnatzim, which if you release it, you can open it wide, and you can pull out the schnatzim and attach one of them to a tree on one side, one to a tree on another side, sort of like a hammock, you know? And then you have a hammock for your wine, which keeps it cool, as if the air is circulating all around it. That is similar to making an ohel, because it really does, it is spread out over the ground. And because of that, the Rabbanan asked. Then we have our case of Mishameret, and then we have the case of Kila. Remember that a Kila is a canopy over a bed, which when you stretch it out, you're making an oil over the bed. And the case of a Kisei Galim, which is a Machlokas Rashi and Tosfos, as to whether the Isser over here by Kisei Galim we had before, a type of bed, which if you take it apart, the way in which you would travel with it is like a traveling bed, camping bed, sort of like a cot. So since these were made that they could be screwed in tight, if you would screw it in tight, then it would be a problem of binyan. So because of that, the Chachomim asked for doing it even loosely. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos says, well, but then that doesn't have to do with the dinim of oil. So why would he have made it here part of his set? Okay, so Tosfos learns it's a different type of kisei that is more similar to Asiyas oil. Fine. And over there, it's Osir. Now, there are those that are Diraita, okay? You can't make an Ohel Keva. You can't make something that is a real tent and put it out. Exactly what defines permanent, that's already a discussion among the Paiskim. And that's either on Shabbos or on Yantav. If you did, so then if it were Shabbos, you'd be Chayav Achatas. But there are things that are not Osir at all. So let's say a folding bed. Or our type of bed, when I say our type, I mean in the time of the Gemara, where the bed would fold up against the wall, and then because you need a space, and then at night you would just pull the bed down, and it would come down. Or if you have a folding chair, which basically just has like a leather piece that's pulled open when you open it, and then you put it back and you lean it against the wall, or a toilet seat, which is exactly the same thing as the bed. It folds up against the back of the toilet, and then you fold it down. Those things are mutter l'natotam, even l'chatchila, because those things basically are already there. The oil is there. You're just moving it. So you're putting it down, you know. And putting it down on this level of impermanence, that they didn't ask for. They only ask if you actually make it, not if it's there and you just move it from one position to another. So that is mutter even lechatchila. Okay, then we went ahead and we said you cannot, according to the Chachamim, you cannot pour the wine into the Mishameret on Shabbos at all. Now, did that mean the Arayta or the Rabbana? We have the same question that we had about the making of the Mishameret Bechlal. So what's the din? Shimer mai. Omer of Kana, if you did it, you'd actually be chayav achatos. Matrik v'lo Rav Sheshes, that's wild. You understand the implications of what you're saying? You're saying that the Rabbonan held that you're chayav achatos if you do something that Rebbe Eliezer says is mutter even lechatchila. I mean, that's a very, very, like, extreme kind of position to take, isn't it? I mean, normally, if there's someone who holds that you're chayav chatos on something, to be matir totally, if there's a tzad of a chi of chatas, and not to at least be machmir ben rabbonin, even if you disagree with the chatas, I mean, that's very rare to find that kind of something. No, you can go right ahead and do something, lechatchila, which others hold is an iser d'oraisa. Very rarely do we find that. Is that what you're claiming over here? That miyika midi derabbonin mechayv echatas, Reb Eliezer would come along and he would be matir, even lechatchila? If Reb Eliezer's matir lechatchila, must be that the rabbonin hold that even if you did it, you would only be an iser d'rabbonin. Matki flor Reb Yosef, wait a second over here, alam alo. Why not? You think Reb Eliezer wouldn't go to extremes? Oh, man, you don't know Reb Eliezer. Remember the sugya we had before about the Irshel Zahav? So over there, Rebbe Meir said, you're chayiv chatas if you walk out wearing an Irshel Zahav into Rosh Hasharabi. You remember the Irshel Zahav that Rabbi Akiva gave to his lover and so on. So there, the question was whether it's really considered to be a takshit in terms of its being decorative, or is it basically a show-off device? In other words, it's too heavy to wear, really, as a design. But if you want to say to people, I have arrived, you wear it the same way you wear your Rolls Royce. I mean, you know, you can't really drive around something so bulky and nonsensical. But the reason that you do is because you got to tell people you arrived. So the same thing is true about an Irshel Zahav. And therefore, if you do it on Shabbos, you would actually be carrying. The other shita is, which we'll see, is that it is a takshit, but we asr it the way we do all these kind of fancy takshitim because we're afraid the woman's going to take it off to show off with. Take it off to Rosh Hasharabim and maybe walk with it while showing to her friends. And yet Reb Eliezer is matir lechatchila. Now that is exactly the same issue. Rabbi Meir holds chayav chatas. Reb Eliezer says you're matir lechatchila. What are you telling me that Reb Eliezer doesn't go to extremes to be matir things where the chachomim hold your chayav chatas? Here's another case. There you go. Oh, what was that? Can you tell me over the bright? Yeah. The Tanya. Lo titzei isha biir shel zahav im yatzat chayevet chatat divrei Rabbi Meir. V'chachomim omrim lo titzei. But im yatzah pitura, we're just afraid that she's going to carry it. Reb Eliezer says, no, she can go out even lechatchila. I knew it. I knew you were hiding something. That's why we wanted you to tell us the braita. Over there, there's a middle shita, which is the shita of the chachamim, that it's only us and the rabbanan. I love the way you presented Rebbe Meir and Reb Eliezer, and now we have these absolutely, wow, what different opinions. I mean, who says Reb Eliezer was relating b'chalal to the psak of Rebbe Meir? Rabbi Meir says, you're chayav achatas. He wouldn't have said in that case that you would be potter. He was going on the Rabbanan. Okay, so the Rabbanan say that it's potter aval osir, and he's saying, no, it's not potter aval osir. It's even mutter lechatchila. So it's not as if it's a contrast from one extreme to the other. We have the shita in the middle. Tosha says, I don't know what the heck that's supposed to mean. I mean, I thought that the problem was, that's all he says. I don't know what the heck that's supposed to mean. Now, obviously, what's bothering him is that if Lomaisa, the Gemara's taina was, that if there's a tzat to say that there's a chiyav d'oraisa, the Reb Eliezer wouldn't have been matur lechatchila, you know? And over here, what's the difference if there's a d'rabbanan? I mean, the fact that there's a gradations doesn't mean that he would be matur lechatchila, something that Rabbi Meir asserted. So Tosha just leaves it hanging, just telling you, I don't know what they're talking about. But, I mean, obviously, the point over here is that what we objected to was not the fact that it's shayach that there was a d'oraisa, but what we objected to is that you would take the opinion that something that is usher b'd'oraisa as your only other option would be mutar lechatchila. That's the point. If I already have the rabbanan, rabbanan is a rabbin that are saying it's only an issur d'rabbanan. No, so memela to say that I'm taking an extreme position. I'm not taking an extreme position. All I'm doing is I'm saying that I'm willing to be samech on the Rabbanan that hold there's certainly no issur of d'oraisa, and I'm saying it's not even issur d'rabbanan. That's all that it means. Okay, because it doesn't like that approach. But in any event, if you're telling me that there would be a chiyav chatas, right? So what would you say is the issur? I mean, obviously, if I'm going to give hasra to somebody and I'm going to be telling him, hey, don't do that because you'll be chayav chatas. I mean, I have to explain to him. He's going to look at me like I'm crazy. What are you, nuts? Tell me what issur I'm doing. So the din is, in order to be mechayav, somebody have to give him hatra'ah, right? So if the guy was about to do an issur, what would you say, you tell him, in terms of the hatra'ah? Rabba says, you can tell him that he's being over on Borer. And Rabbi Zera says, Borer? It's not Borer. it's basically sifting, right? I mean, you're being miraculous. You're pouring something through a sifter, in this case, a cloth or a gauze, classic sifter. I understand what you're talking about, borer. Now, as Rashi explains, Rabbah was not saying you have to be maser mishum borer. Rabbah was just saying, even if you said mishum borer, you would also be mechayev him, because that would be a proper hasra. He certainly admits that it is similar to meraket, and he would agree with Rabbi Zera. And says Rabbah, look, I think that in this case, I'm right, and that borer certainly would include a case like this. Because look, the derech of borer is that he takes the ochel and leaves the psolet, which is not true. This is basically how this whole, the whole Gemara we had before is that it's exactly the opposite. The derech of the borer is that he takes out the psolet from the ochel, and dafka, if you want to be mater borer, you say it that way, right? So okay, there's a big problem in this Gemara. So again, that's why I said before, you're getting too close to the bottom of the barrel. So as we say in English, that's the dregs, right? So what you have over there is so many dregs that in that case, the derech of the borer would be, if you have the rove of what it is that it's full of stones and so on, and you need to pick out the few grains that you have over there, of course, you're going to take the ochel and you'll leave the psoet. It's the same thing is true over here in a case where you've got a tremendous amount of dirt mixed in with your wine because you're at the bottom of the barrel, which we call scraping the bottom of the barrel, exactly the case over here. So in that case, the derech of the borer would be is that you take the ochel out and you leave the psolet. So afakanami no telat ochel, uminiyachat psolet. Whereas Rabbi Zera says, no, what I'm saying is much more reasonable. Because ma darko shomarakeid, when you sift things, okay, what happens? So the psolet falls out, and the food falls out, and you have these pieces of stones and stuff that is left behind, and that stays behind. So the same thing is true over here. The psola, the dregs, they stay on top in the gauze, and the wine is strained out, and it comes out underneath. Tony Rami Bar Yecheskel, Talit Kvula, other cases that we want to discuss. Now that we've raised the question of whether you could spread a mishameret. So, I mean, like, this is the kind of thing that happens all the time, really. Give us some clarity about what type of things are mutter, what types of things are usher on Shabbos that are similar to this asiyas ha'ohel. So, I mean, what people would very often do is if they're camping, so they would build something like, they don't have the tents that we have, and what they would do is they would go around with pieces of wood, which kind of things that we would use to pitch the tent around, you know, like the kind of bendable pieces that are used in modern tents. So they would take four of those pieces of wood, little poles, carry them around with them, and basically form a tent-like structure, which would just be four poles stuck in the ground, bent in a little bit. And then they would take their talis at night and put the talis over the structure, and that way they would have like a tent. So now the question is, can I do that or not? That was called a talit kfula. It was called folding over your talis over, it would go over the top and down the sides, right? So you're not allowed to do that on Shabbos, but if you did, you would be usher. It was only an issur d'rabbanan because it's an ohel arai, obviously, and therefore you're not chayav on it. But you could do it in a way that you could do even l'chatchila. So right before Shabbos, what you could do is you could put the talis up on the top, and you could put strings on the talis, the part that was folded under, and you would roll the talis up, and then when you pull the string, then the talis would come out something like a window shade, and then it would be coming down the sides. And that would be okay, because you set it up basically before Shabbos. Now, why exactly it's okay is not clear. Tosis learns it's okay because when you folded the talis, rolled it up around the strings, it was already a tefach. And if it's already a tefach, then it means that there already is an ohel, and that would be only usufe, and usufe is mutter. But that's pretty much not a chiddush bichlal. And because of that, it's a big machlokas halacha l'maisa, whether this is a special din or whether it's the standard din of usufe because of a tefach. Okay, that already is nogeya mimamish till the time of the Mishnah Berurah, even the machlokas and go on about what this Gemara actually means. Would you be allowed to put a canopy over your bed? Now, remember that canopy also is like this cloth that is spread out over four poles, one on each corner of a bed. So Rav said to him, a canopy? Forget about the canopy. You can't even set up the bed. So another time Rav Kana said, are you allowed to set up a bed? A bed? You'd even be able to set up a canopy. Rav loved doing this. So finally Rav Kana said, oh, I give up. Okay, let's put it together, okay? Can you make a bed and a canopy? Well, said Rav, now you can't make a canopy, but you can make a bed. I thought I was going to get clarity. Anyway, so can you explain it to me? So says the Gemara, yeah, we can explain it. When Rav said, you can't even make a bed, that was talking about the Karmanai kind of bed, which is similar, according to Rashi, to the Kisei, to the Galin, Mita Galin. And over there, that was the problem because they would get screwed in and it was in pieces. And because of that, we're always Cheshesh Shema Yitka Bechoska, you may end up putting it in so tightly that it would actually be an Isrdi, right? Of Binyan. Okay, so because there we asked Min Rabbanan, when he said, what do you mean a bed? You can even make a canopy. That is referring to the case that we just had, which was Rami Bar Yecheskel, who said, as long as you've got the talis kfula, which applied to a canopy would mean that if it's a type of canopy, which you roll up and it's got these strings on, you just pull it down and it goes over the poles on the side of the bed. So then that you're allowed to do even the chatchila, because it's talking about over here that you had a frame. If you have a frame, then there's no problem of pulling the canopy over it. And when he said akila is usher, but the mita is mutter, that's talking about the standard bed and the standard canopy in our times, again, our referring to the times of the Amoraim, in which the bed would be folded up against the wall. You could pull the bed down, and then the canopy, however, would then have to be spread on four poles from nothing, and that would be usher because it would be making a oil aright. Rav Yosef, I can tell you, I once visited by Rav Huna, and they had the bed up at night, and I noticed they had the canopy up on top of the bed. And then in the morning, when they had put up the beds against the wall, I saw that the canopies had been removed and they were folded on the ground. So, I mean, obviously, it was mutter to take down the canopy. If it's mutter to take down the canopy, then it has to be mutter to put up the canopy, because remember, the din of Binyan and Stira are always in precisely the same situation. So, what was the din over there? They must have held that it was mutter. Again, a discussion of precisely what type of bed and canopy was it, obviously, would change the whole thing. But that information is not given to us. Omer Rav Mishum Rabbi Chiya, how about a curtain? A curtain is not a problem because, again, it's like, remember, we're talking about a curtain over a way into a house or something, which we've talked about many times. This was that famous sheet of Rashi. Rashi says there is no din, the halal of Israel, you don't even need usufe oil. There's no problem of asiyas oil if you're talking about something that is hanging vertically. There's only something that is, that's why he learns the whole sugya of the idea of kaka chalon. It's not talking about a chalon in a wall. According to Rashi, it's talking about a chalon on the roof. It's talking about a skylight. Because if it isn't a gag, according to Rashi, it isn't an ohel at all. Tosfos argued in certain cases with Rashi we had before. But in any event, over here, that it's completely vertical, so it's like a shower curtain or so on, that you'd be allowed to do even on Shabbos. Another mimer, similar to these dinim of the Ohel, was that a kilat chatanim is mutar l'netotah u'mutar l'forkah. You're allowed to put up a kilas chasanim, and you're allowed to take it down. Now, what exactly is a kilas chasanim? There's actually, Rashi has two different approaches. In different places, he says different things. So what he says over here in Shabbos is that a kilas chasanim is a decorative bed, and it is not meant to be slept under because it's very, very thin. So it's sort of like a sign of good luck or whatever. And you can, you know, you can put maybe your decorations and so on under it, but it is not wide enough to sleep under, as we're going to see. However, elsewhere Rashi says that Akilas Chasanim most definitely is used to sleep under, and the structure that we're about to describe in the Gemara, which seems outrageously impossible to sleep under, because it's not even two tefachim thick. You have to have an awfully thin chasam v'kala to sleep under that one. But anyway, it means that it's referring only to a very beautiful kind of canopy, which are done in multiples. Maybe they're done in multiples of 10. So basically, according to Rashi there, what we'd be talking about is that you've got a description of a canopy in which it goes up and down and then up and down and up and down, maybe 10 times until it covers up the whole area of the bed. But it isn't just straight. Oh, no, it keeps going. It looks like folds in the canopy. And what the Gemara is discussing over here is the folds. It is not discussing the folds that come all the way down to the bed, because then if you're giving me a maximum of two tefachim on the folds, obviously, if it comes down to the bottom of the bed and it's only two tefachim, you wouldn't be able to get anybody in there, even alone after he does all of his exercises. Even he couldn't fit under there. So because of that, there may be two different approaches. But I said over here, Rashi learns that it's decorative. And the Kilas Chatanim, you're allowed to put up, you're allowed to take it down. So Rav Sheshet Breid Ravidi wants to make sure that we understand what the configuration is that we're being matir. Lo amran ela she'ein begagat tefach. First of all, you got to understand that the Kilat Chatanim is not made on four poles. It folds over one pole that goes from the top of the bed to the foot of the bed. And then it goes down on the side. Okay, so that's one reason why you're allowed to put it up on Shabbos, is because the top of the pole is not a tefach wide. And if it's not a tefach wide, it doesn't qualify as a roof. So there's no problem of oil. So that's what it's talking about. Ein begagat tefach. But if it would have had a tefach, the gaga would be usher. Oh, and by the way, I need to also point out to you that it does not get to be a tefach wide within three tefachim of the point where the pole is. Because if it spreads to a tefach within three tefachim, remember that three tefachim are considered to be lavud. And if they're lavud, it would mean that you have a roof of more than a tefach. So that means it has to be so thin that the angle at which it falls also can't reach the point where it's at an angle that will make it a full tefach wide within three tefachim. So we're talking about something that is, you know, it's pretty close to going straight down, okay? Because if it were, then it would be usser. Because if it's somach l'gago yesh pepachot b'shlosha somach l'gago tefach, then it already would be a tefach. And I need to make another point, because I'll bet you were thinking you could figure out a way to sleep under this thing by maybe constricting it within three tefachim and then letting it spread under that, right? Wrong. Because if it reaches in the shipua, so if there's a place in which from the distance between the top, if you would measure between the top, you draw a line straight down to the middle of the bed. If it reaches one tefach on either side of that line by the time it hits the mattress, then it would be also usher, because that's called shipuei o'alim. And if it had shipua tefach, then it would be shipuei o'alim, and that would be usher because they have a din of o'alim. So as you can see, you are not going to be able to fit under this kilas chasanim. Now, again, according to Rashi elsewhere, of course you can fit under the kilas chasanim. All you need is a lot of them. So, I mean, if you've got 10 of these folds, and then it goes back up again and comes back down, and it never reaches a tefach within three tefachim of the top, so then there won't be a problem. So then you could put it up, because you basically, each one is a separate unit, and then you would never be having a place where you get a tefach on top. Okay. Anyway, there's also another thing, and that is that there can't be a tefach hanging down over the edge of the bed to cover the side of the bed. Because if there would be, then nachis bipuria tefach, it would be usher if it hangs down, because then that would make it very similar to a building, because it's covering over the sides of the bed, and then we've got a roof on top. Now it really looks like an oil, and that would be usher. And says Rav Sheshet Breid Ravidi, well, I mean, if that's usher, then you're not allowed to wear one of these black borsalinos on Shabbos either, because you got an oil, right? I mean, you've got a felt hat, which is a sayana, and lechora, and that would be a problem. Well, I want to tell you there's a way to make it not a problem. What? But the Brisa said it is a problem. the Itmar Sayana is Osir. So now here, the Lokash Adi is Betefach. It depends on how wide the brim is. If the brim is a Tefach, so then those wide-brimmed Borsolinos, those are a tent. So if you put it on your head, so you're making an oil. So you would not be allowed to wear a hat on Shabbos. It would have to be one of those much less in style, in yeshiva styles, thin brims hat, which of course could get you thrown out of some yeshivas. And so because of that, it would be a tremendous problem. Moshe Forman says it's a fedora. Okay, we can get pictures of fedora and post them. So that depends. Wait a minute, says the Gemara. You're telling me that if you have a beged that sticks out a tefach, that is considered to be an oil. Did you ever watch anybody put on their talus on Shabbos? I mean, they put on their talus, so they put it over their head, right? It sticks out over the front of your head, doesn't it? And you put it around your shoulders and the whole thing. I mean, you're telling me that if a guy puts on his talus and it sticks out a tefach in front of his head, he's making an oil? That sounds pretty weird to me. So you're going to tell me that you're going to call him chayev on Shabbos? Nobody ever was makban on that kind of thing. So that's not the answer, okay? Ela lo kasha. The difference is, hada mahadek, hada lo mahadek. It depends how tight the hat fits. Now, Rashi learns that what we're doing over here is we're giving up on the din of an ohel on a hat, and we're saying a different issue, that you can't wear a hat on Shabbos if it's the kind of hat that can blow off your head. Because if it can blow off your head, then we're afraid you're going to carry it Abraham as precious a rabbit. But if it's attached with a string around the bottom, or it goes over so much of your head and fits so tightly that it can't come off, then there's no gezerah. But Tosis learned, Ben Chanano learns, that we didn't change our mind. What we're saying is that there's a difference between a felt hat, which is stiff, and that is considered to be an ohel, and a talus, which is not stiff. That's the point. And therefore, it's not considered to be an ohel. But we haven't gone off of the topic. Sholach le'romi bar yecheskel ravuna, this because, as we'll see, it has to do with the din of an ohel aroi. So Rami bar yecheskel sent a message to Ravuna. Could you please tell us sort of easy, like again, some of those things that told us those great things that you said in the name of Rav. Remember, there were two dinim that you told us that had to do with Shabbos, and there was one thing you told us that had to do with the nature of Torah itself, and I can't remember. It made such an impact on me. If you don't mind, send it to me again. So Ravuna sends him back. Okay, here are all three things. Okay, first of all, Hadatanya, one of the things, he says to Rabbi Baruch Eskel, one of the things that Rav said is that in the Braita that talks about hanging the goad, remember the goad was the wine cooler leather holder that you spread out? So we said you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. So Rav said, you can do that if you've got two guys that are spreading it out simultaneously. One guy's hanging it on one pole, one guy's hanging it on the other pole. But if you do it with one guy, then it's usher. So Rashi says, okay, I cannot claim to understand this, but I can tell you what I was taught, but I don't know what it means. But what I was taught was that if one guy does it, so then what he would have to do is he would have to tie one side of it to one pole, and then he would pull it over to the other pole and tie it to the other pole. So then it would be like really tight. And if it were really tight, so then it would be similar to an ohel aroi. But if two people do it, then they won't pull it tight. They'll hang it loosely because nobody is concerned for pulling it because the other guy's holding it and each one is relying on the other, something like that. I don't really know why, says Rashi. But anyway, that's what I was told. Okay, and furthermore, Abai interrupted the story. And he said, you should just know that when it comes to a kila, which we said over there, there's a problem. Over there, it's a problem if you've got 10 people doing it. Because even though everybody's relying on everybody else, you're saying nobody's pulling tight. It's so big that there's got to be a little bit of an area, maybe a couple of tvachim or whatever, that's going to be spread out tight. And on that part, it would be usher, and that's why we usher it. Okay, so that was one of the dinim. What was the other thing about Shabbos? V'idach mahi. Oh, so the other thing was like this. And this, of course, we just learned yesterday in our review of Kalim, so we'll remember this one. that it says if you have a kira shenishmata achat miyarchotel, so one of the legs breaks off from a kira, it's mutter to move it on Shabbos because it's still usable. But if two of its legs break, it's usser. And Rav added to that, and this was the thing that you wanted me to remind you about. He said that even if one of its legs fell off, there's a problem of Shabbos. Not maybe not by Tumah, it could still be usable. But we're worried about Gzeir Rabbanan, that you may come to screw in another leg instead, and you'll be Yitka. And Yitka is Osir. And then the other thing that you said about Terah was that Rav said like this, Atida Torah shetishtakach miYisrael, shenemar v'yifla Hashem et makotecha. So it says in the Tochacha, v'yifla Hashem, yifla means wondrous makos. Okay, what would that be? Like, what would be inconceivable? Haflazo inyodeyamahu. So what is this kolola? So Kishua Omer, l'chein, it says in Yeshayahu, hineni yosif lafli et ha'am hazeh hafleva fele. Okay, so now here is the hafleva fele. What is the hafleva fele? So Yeshayahu explains, v'ovda chochumat chachamav, ubinat nivonav nististatar. So then that means losing chochma and bina for the chachomim is a pele. And that's what it's referring to. Savi Omer Hafla'a Zot Torah. And therefore, that's what it's referring to, is the loss of Torah. Tana Rabbana. Kishenichnesu Rabotenu Lekerem B'Yavne Amru. So when the Chachomim came in, and they moved the Sanhedrin, they came to Kerem B'Yavne, they said at that time, Atida Torah Shetishtakach Mi'Yisrael. Things are going to get terrible. Because it says, Hinei Yamim Ba'im Nu'um Hashem Elokim, V'yishlachtiv Ra'av Ba'aretz. So Amos says, there's a coming hunger, which is not a Ra'av L'lechem, V'lo Tzom Alamayim, Ki'im Lishmo Et Divrei Hashem. So the sense of distance and hopelessness, we can't know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, that means that V'no'u Miyam Ad Yamu Mitzafon V'ad Mizrach, people are going to be wandering from one sea to the other sea, from the north down the east, Yeshota to Levakish is Dvar Hashem. They will go from yeshiva to yeshiva, trying to find somebody who can tell them something intelligent. V'lo Yimtzo, they will not find it. Dvar Hashem refers to all types of elements of the Dvar Hashem. Dvar Hashem refers to halacha. Dvar Hashem sometimes refers to the kates, what to do as the time of Mashiach comes closer. And the Dvar Hashem refers to Nevuah. So it's interesting. Rashi says, I have no idea why Dvar Hashem is called the Kates. I don't know of any pasuk that calls the Kates the Dvar Hashem. And Tosfos says, well, I know. The answer is that it says in the beginning of Ezra, it says that it was at the end of the 70 years, L'chalot Dvar Hashem, Yipir Yirmiyahu. So that obviously it was referring to the Kates of the Shivim Shana then, and that means that Dvar Hashem can refer to the Kates. That was in terms of the first Beis HaMikdash. And the Dvar Hashem often refers to Nevi'as, like Dvar Hashem Asheraya El Hoshea, right? Or in terms of Torah, it's La'agid L'cham Et Dvar Hashem. I mean, that over there was the halacha that Moshe Rabbeinu was referring to. Fine. So those three things are going to be lost. And what does it mean when it says Yeshota too? They're going to wander around Levakesh Et Dvar Hashem and hear a yesterday's sugya, 2 days ago's sugya in Kalim that we went into in detail is precisely what our Gemara is concerned about. The days will come that a woman is going to go all around the country trying to get a clear psak halacha and cannot get it. What in the world is this referring to? Well, a woman will be walking around with a loaf of truma bread, which had fallen into a tanur that was tamei from a sheretz. And she's going to every Beit Knesset, every Beit Midrash, and she wants to know, is this bread Tamei or is it Tahar? And Ein Mevin, nobody knows. What are you talking about? That's a Beferish or Pasuk. There's no such thing as forgetting a Beferish or Pasuk. You just open up the Chumash. I mean, what do you mean, Tahar or Im Tamei? It says in the Pasuk, Mikola Ochel Asher Yeachel. It says anything, Kol Kli Cheres, Asher Yipol Mehem El Tocho, Kol asher betocho yitma, mikol ha'ochel asher ye'achel yitma. So what was she now? What do you mean? She doesn't know if it's Tamei or Tahar. That's absurd. No, it doesn't mean that. It means she wanted to know whether the bread has a din of a Rishon Betuma or a Sheni Betuma, which would make a tremendous nafkamina in terms of whether it could be Matame other things that had come into contact with it. And that nobody could tell her. What do you mean nobody could tell her? I mean, they certainly didn't forget the Mishnah in Kalim, for heaven's sakes. It's a Farisha Mishnah. It's a Masnisini. It says in the Mishnah, Sheret Shinim Tzabitanur, Hapat Shabitocho Shniya. It says that the bread is a sheni betuma. Why? Because the tanur itself is a trila, and then the trila, which is a rishon, makes the pas a sheni. So what was there not to know? I mean, they certainly didn't forget a beferish a mishnah. Ah, and this is exactly the sugya that we spoke about. Mistapkelu hodi amalei ravada barava larava. The question is like this. It's all very nice to say that if a piece of bread falls into a tanur that was tame, and the tanur became tame from a sheretz, that the Mishnah says that the bread is in fact a sheni. Oh, absolutely. I have another issue. Suppose the bread falls into the tanur where the sheretz is currently in the tanur, but the bread doesn't touch the sheretz, okay? So now, why don't we look at the avir of that tanur? Because since the sheretz is capable of being metame the tanur, so how does that work? Does it work by radiating the tumah magically to the tanur through some type of medium that we don't know about? Or is it because we view the entire tanur as being filled with sheretz? If the entire tanur is being filled with sheretz the way an ohel hameis is filled with tumas hameis, and just yesterday we're talking about all of the Mishnayos that are talking about Hatzolah ba'ohel hameis and its similarity to the din of Tocho of a tanur. So then, we should say, if the bread was in the tanur together with the sheretz, then for all intents and purposes, even without touching the sheretz, it basically became tame from the sheretz, because the entire airspace of the tanur was now tame from an av hatuma. And if it was tame from an av hatuma, that would mean that this bread is now a rishon, and as a rishon, it can make a sheni, and that would even pasul truma as a shlishi. I mean, I gotta know, because this bread came into contact with other bread. Now, would you please tell me, guys, what's the din? So, and that was what she wanted to know. I mean, this is a pretty smart woman. She wanted to know the suffix of Ravada Barava. Why don't we view the tanur as being full of tuma, and then the pas becomes a rishona? Omar Lay, Sarova said to Ravada Barava, you can't say that. Lo amrina lechazi haitanur commanded the molik tuma. Nobody could say that. Because remember that Yochel, you call a kelim etami bavir kli cheres, you might think that if there was a metal kli, which is makabel tuma from its outside, and it's inside of a kli cheres, and that kli cheres, it becomes tome with a sheretz. So you might think that the kli shetef, that metal kli that was in there, would also become tome. Talmud lomar, kol asher betocho yitma, and then it adds, Mikola Okala Shayachel. What's tame in a klicharis? In an avir of a tanur. Only something which is edible. Ochlin mitami bavir klicharis. Mashki mitami bavir. But kalim, even clay matechet, which are makabal tumah from their outsides, are not makabal tumah from a klicharis. Why not? I'll tell you why not. Because they cannot be makabal tumah unless they're touched by an avatuma. And in this case, they are not touched with an avatuma, which proves conclusively that the airspace of the tanner is not filled with sheretz tuma, which would be an avatuma. It works with radiation. So first, the tanner would have to become tame by being irradiated from the sheretz, and then it would have to radiate into something in its airspace tuma. And if it hits a kli, it would only be radiating with a rishon on the tuma because of attenuation. And because of that, the kli would not be able to be mekabel tuma. So we learn from there, indeed, as we spoke about yesterday, you cannot be view it as being molei tuma, A. And secondly, that a kli is only mekabel tuma from an ava tuma and not from a rishon latuma. That would be exactly the point. So I don't know. What would you guys like to do? We want to finish right here in the middle of the sugya, or shall we? Okay, very good. I'm purely in favor as well. I just needed somebody else to say it, so they can't blame me, you know? So actually, however, not everybody holds like this. And the initials of the man who doesn't hold like this, we know who that is, don't we? Because when we had the terrible disaster of 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva being lost, and that was indeed the Torah being Mishtakachat Miyisrael, there was one person among the six in the end that made the difference of Baboker Zrad Zarecho Berav Al Tanachadech, and that was Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Aha. And indeed, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says, Chas for Shalom, Shetishtakach Torah Miyisrael. After all, the Torah promised that Yochai would be back on duty. Doesn't it say, Ki lo tishachach mipi zaro? And the Hasidim say that the Sof Tevas over here is Yochai. Ki lo tishachach mipi zaro. Very cute. Anyway, so Rabbi Shimon is bringing this pasuk, and he says it'll never be forgotten. Elamani mikayem yesho tetula vakesh edvar Hashem v'lo yimtso. They can't find the Dvar Hashem. That means the situation that perfectly describes the current mess in halacha, which is you cannot find halacha brura u'mishnah brura b'mokam echad. You are never going to be able to go through a sugya and understand it in such a way that it ends up being similar to the halacha. What? Somehow or other, the development of the halacha over time has departed so much that whatever it is that you get into in the Gemara, you're going to end up with a machlokas where there's 25 different shittas, and then you're going to start paskening according to the rove of these different shittas, and then somebody who reads the Shulchan Aruch is going to say, what does this have to do with the Gemara that I learned? It's filled with contradictions, and that's exactly the problem. So you feel that you've lost the Dvar Hashem because you can't put it all together. Okay, gentlemen, wonderful. So may the time come that we shall be zochet halacha brura, mishnah brura, b'makom echad. Kol tov, Rosh Chodesh tov u'mevorach, b'surot tovot, and may it be a chodesh of geula and nechama.